Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
All right, welcome everybody to the NCSM Learning with Leaders podcast. I am Abel Maestas.
And I'm Karen Riley Jeffers.
And we welcome everybody, all the listeners here to the podcast. This month, we are so excited to have with us Hannah Elmy. So welcome to the podcast, and we're so excited to have you here to share about how what you are doing in your classroom and what you're doing in our series, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics.
Thank you so much for having me.
So here's a little bit about Hannah. Hannah is an elementary educator in Ontario, Canada, rooted in community work, being in service of her students, families, colleagues, and ensuring that classrooms are safe, responsive, and humanizing places for her students. She's passionate about humanizing curriculums that allow students to not only reflect upon their own gifts, knowledge, dreams, voices, learning, and experiences, but to deeply connect with others and the world around them in just, restorative, and conscious ways. Outside the classroom, Hannah enjoys building, writing, and presenting with fellow educators to further explore ways of centering student voice, choice, and agency within educational frameworks. So once again, thank you, Hannah, for being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much, Abel and Karen, for the space, the platform, and for the invitation. I'm excited to get started.
Awesome.
Yes, we are super excited that you're here. Thank you again for being with us today. Before we begin, I know Abel just introduced you, but if you will share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work.
Okay, so for me, when I think about my earliest memories of education, I heard the word education, I had to really default to thinking back as that super shy, quiet kid sitting in the classroom. I really enjoyed learning, but I never really felt a deep sense of belonging at school. I got really good at mirroring what my teachers were doing, their process and the result that they were trying to achieve. If they solved a math problem one way, I made sure I could replicate it. If they formulated a paragraph using particular words, I made sure I did as well. But I was always really curious about why. But being that kid who just wanted to do well and just kind of be in the class, I never really had the courage to ask the teacher any further questions. But what happened when I got into secondary school, and especially when courses started to become more specialized, was that the why became more and more important to me, but I still muster the courage to ask my teachers. So I remember sitting in my grade 11 functions class and just thinking, okay, I know Sakatoa, but like, why is this important? Why do I need to know this? And what was happening simultaneously, though, was that I spent a lot of my summers and my weekends and holidays tutoring and working at education-based camps in my community. And I really enjoyed helping other kids and students try to figure out the why. Even if I myself didn't know the answers, I really liked having them try and think about why learning was meaningful for them. So I tried to hold space, give them the time to process a lot of the things that I didn't really get in the classroom. So it was kind of like my foray into education per se. Sort of continuing to university, and then I actually ended up trying to pursue nursing at first. And then after a few years, I was realigned in education after I had a public health placement in a school. So I was in a school for a semester doing public health, and I kind of was like, no, I actually really like education. So I actually want to be a teacher. So that's where I am now. I've been teaching across the entire elementary panel for the last 12 years. And my role this year is teaching an amazing group of grade 3, 4, and 5 multilingual learners, where my teaching focus is specifically on literacy and math. And it's been such a gift just to be with them and learn alongside them each and every day.
All right. I can't wait to hear about this experience with multilingual learners. We have so many in our district here. And a lot of times it is difficult for them to see themselves as mathematicians. So as you know, I talked about this a little earlier. Our season series is titled Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. So our leading question for all of our guests, what does it mean to belong in mathematics?
First of all, love this theme. It's what caught my attention right away, because that feeling of belonging is something that I really think about. I think for me, I actually never found belonging in mathematics until I became a teacher myself, which I guess is kind of interesting, but something as an educator I really think deeply about, because I didn't have it as a student. Last year I had a role that allowed me to really teach many, many groups of students. I was in a library role, and we looked at how we actually define belonging and how it manifests in our learning spaces. And after a whole year-long exploration into the word specifically, like a word study, we settled on belonging being healthy connections with one another, safety to be who I am and for others to do the same, comfort in knowing that I will receive the care and support that I need, and safety was a big one, to be seen, heard, and witnessed as my whole self, and to try and fail and make mistakes and still be held by our teachers and others. So in the context of a math classroom, I've been thinking deeply over the last few years that so much of belonging in our math spaces is very conditional. We need to get the right answer. We need to process and solve things in the fastest way. We need to be the one with our hands raised the highest in front of the teacher's face. We have to mirror our teachers and replicate what they do. It's a very false sense of belonging, because the only students who then feel like they can be affirmed are like they belong are the ones who fulfill this very narrow view of what quote unquote a good student is. So the question when I read it first was, it also made me think very deeply about this powerful word, quote from Dr. Rochelle Gutierrez, when she asks, what is this thing called mathematics? Who is it by? Who is it for? And who gets credit? In order to truly belong in mathematics, we have to create opportunities for students to access and share the math knowledge and experiences that they already come to school with. This is a really pivotal point. We have to really remove ourselves as the experts in the room, because in reality, we're not. We have to ask how much time our math block is invested in allowing kids to see, to hear, to witness each other's brilliances, because we have so much genius in our classrooms. We have to ask ourselves, are we hearing and recognizing each student's voice? What norms for safety and care have we established for kids to want to take more risks, or even ask the question that I couldn't ask as a student, which is, why is this important? I feel like as teachers, we don't like hearing that, but we actually should listen to it and lean into it. To me, belonging must be a collective exercise where we're all engaged in this project of ensuring that we can move past simply saying students are mathematicians. We like to say it. We actually have to allow kids to claim that title by honoring their own knowledge and what they have to say around mathematics.
Hannah, you said so much there. You're making me think about so many things. And as you always do, whenever I hear you speak, you drop very profound things. And you made me think about a personal reflection that I was having in terms of just that feeling and sense of belonging. And I liken belonging to places where I feel at home. Because, you know, like for some people, home is not a place of belonging. But for me, home is a place of belonging. And so as I reflect on what it means to belong, I reflect on my feelings of what it means for me to be at home. And one of those things that I wrote was in regards to feeling safe and being able to be myself. And so as we lead into like our next question, as a teacher, how do you go about creating that? Because I see so many nuances involved in creating a safe space of belonging in a classroom where students are comfortable enough to take those risks, to ask questions, to not have that fear. I identify with what you said regarding that being that shy person, because I was that shy person too. I actually wouldn't raise my hand. I didn't want to talk. I didn't want the teacher to call on me. Hey, let me just do my work.
Now you're hosting a podcast.
I know, right?
That's a lot of growth, Karen. That's a lot of growth.
It is. But I didn't think about it in terms of not feeling like I belonged, because if I felt safe enough to speak and to raise my hand and to share, then maybe I would have. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think about it in that lens. It was just like, nope, don't look at me. Don't call on me. I don't want, you know, I just stayed out of trouble and I did my work. So how do you foster belonging in your classroom? And how does that resonate with other educators you work with? And if you could expound on like how you create some of the things that you just spoke about, that would be great.
I'm going to share an example further down, but I want to, first of all, honor what you're saying, Karen, because you and I'm experiencing a lot of the same things, because that was an awakening for me. It, like I said, I didn't feel like I belonged until I became a teacher, and I was on the other side of the table, per se. When you start to see like the things that we experience as kids or as students in a school, you didn't want other kids to have to experience because you understood what it felt like. So thinking about my own experience as a student, I really strive to simply ask myself a question each and every day. Am I inviting students to learning experiences that allow them to show up as their true and whole selves? Or am I asking them in a way to fragment who they are and leave something at the door? I experienced a lot of disconnection, like we talked about in my earlier days of school, especially as a Black Muslim girl. So the greatest gift I really try to give my kids is that room to really stretch and be who they are and exist how they come, and to honor that when they come into the classroom. A big shift for me in the last couple of years is really because of the demographic of kids that I teach, I feel a deeper sense of obligation to really bring my whole self, even as an educator. So for them, I love talking to them about how my grandfather was my first math teacher. And in every sense, you know, we're in a very credential and accolade focused world. He wouldn't be considered a math educator. He never learned to write or read, but he is just a math educator living and breathing as he is. He's intelligent, wise, and our students have folks in their lives who are their first and primary math teachers who share so much wisdom and knowledge that we often don't see valued in our formal math classrooms. So it's really important for me when we're talking about coming in and not disconnecting from who we are, giving kids the opportunity to see themselves and others as having an innate capacity to do math and to do it well. To know that we exist in families that do math, and that we come from deeply rich and historically powerful math cultures and backgrounds. When we say that math is our collective legacy, it's that each and every one of us is part of that legacy. So for us, that meant making room for a collective math project where we had kids come in with games that they played at home. I shared a game with them, actually two games with them that my grandfather had taught me. And we played them in class together. And then they brought games from home and from the places and countries we come from. And we think about how those games came to be and what they can teach us. And through this project, we've been able to see how math is not only inherent, but fundamental to who we are as people, and that we all belong to this very large, global, beautiful math community. So whenever I share this learning with other educators, I think it really strikes a chord. Even we can feel disconnected, removed from the math, especially as elementary teachers. In order for us to feel our own sense of belonging, we have to get to the root of whether we feel like we're part of this legacy ourselves. I shared an image of one of my students. He's new to Canada, and just out of our free time period, he was writing the numbers 1 to 20, and then above it, he was writing the same numbers, but in Farsi, which is his first language. And I took a photo of just the back of him writing, and I shared it with another teacher, and I had not known this, but she had come to Canada as a young child and had wished that she had had the space to share her math knowledge in her first language as a newcomer. So it felt very visceral for her. She ended up like really crying, and I told her, like, I have a similar experience where I wish someone had honored the math knowledge that I came into the classroom with, as opposed to having me replicate or regurgitate one formula or one way of learning. So we hear a lot about this in math, this universality. We say math is a universal language, but what opportunities are we giving students to see themselves and others who have been traditionally left out of the greater math narrative? Who gets to enter the classroom with their funds of knowledge, and who has to leave theirs at the door? Who has to be fragmented, and who gets to be whole? Whose math knowledge is valued? These are like some of the really big guiding questions that can help us really think about fostering belonging in a deeper way.
So do you mind if I ask for you to break down what it means to be fragmented?
I think when I think about fragmented, I think of a complete disconnect between home and school. When you leave home, you're almost leaving a part of yourself there. You come and you enter a building where you're in a sense, really asked to belong, but you're not allowed to have parts of yourself show up in the classroom. So that example of like the games that my grandpa was taught, a lot of them are subitizing games. Some of them are just like measurement games. I learned math through these methods. Had I had the opportunity to share some of these ways that I had learned, I could have said, I too come from a history of math. Math is not owned by one particular group of people. It's not, they're not experts in it. But we all come from histories where math is such a pivotal, important part of who we are as people. So we want kids to be whole, bring all of you, your genius, your history, your experiences, your math knowledge, what your family does to learn, how you learn, your language. Super important to have that consistent in the classroom, math included. So many of our students, they have a very stark image. I remember one student in an adjacent classroom, they had described, you know, talk about your school experiences. And he's been in Canada now for 3 years. And he wrote, you know, before I came to Canada, I used to love math and I used to be good at math and I'm not good at math anymore. And I wanted to, like, what does that mean that now you're here, you don't feel adequate in math? What is it about how we are teaching students, especially our newcomers, that they don't get to bring their genius and math knowledge into the classroom because it's quote unquote not the valued version of math?
Not the valued version of math. that's pretty powerful, thinking about value and what does it mean to be valued. And is that really, like, if we're saying we're measuring that value, like, we don't want to we're not trying to fit people in a certain hole. It got me thinking to something you said. You know, there's that statement that you said, and I think a lot of people say, oh, math is universal. Math is, math is the same here as is there. But the more that I've, you know, the last, I'd say 10 years or so, the more I've been thinking about what's the education and teaching in other countries, and as we've been working towards our own mathematics education, and funny that you're from Canada, we're from the US, so we are from different countries. You know, what is the math? Is the math the answer? Or is the math the way of thinking and questioning and problem solving and getting there? And if that's the math, then math not necessarily is universal. Math is different. Math is culturally different. Math is beautifully different. And I think that the more we can, like you said, foster those, be a place where students can authentically be themselves in those differences, and feel safe in those differences. And I think we're, like you said, we're bringing everyone in the mathematics. So it's just kind of blowing my mind right now, thinking about that, yeah, there are different ways to solve a problem. And that could be from where you know, that could be from your experiences, which are different for everyone. And we have to foster those differences. So that gets me thinking about something you had in your bio, which was that you had a passion for humanizing curriculum. And I think we're touching a little bit on what it means to be humanizing in a mathematics classroom. But curriculum is kind of this weird word that could mean like the textbooks and stuff that you use or other things too, that go in your class. So my question for you is, what aspects of a curriculum would you look for, or do you see as humanizing, and what could teachers and leaders do if they maybe have adopted some sort of curriculum that doesn't meet those needs of humanizing, which I know that there are a lot out there. So what could we be doing to foster that humanizing curriculum if we don't have it?
I think there's a quiet or sometimes loud misconception that we, when we seek to humanize our curriculums, that it requires us to kind of overhaul a whole program that our school might be using, or for us to invent or reinvent an entirely new curriculum, when really what it does, it seeks to cause us to pause and to more deeply connect with the human beings we're entrusted to teach each day. Our students already come to school with valuable bodies of knowledge, experiences, histories, insights, like we talked about. The question is, how can I leverage these to deepen the teaching and learning of a particular curriculum expectation or standard? So how can we sustain and nurture joy, excitement? That's important when we're thinking about developing an outline or curriculum or utilizing a particular curriculum and ensuring that the love of learning that the students possess is sustained. So for example, our students are curious and they're compassionate. How can these qualities connect to a unit outline on measurement or financial literacy? I remember two particular math lessons where we were comparing food prices of food in our local area versus those of a fly-in community in northern Canada. And the kids were just talking about why that might be. Why is there such a vast difference? Why is orange juice $27 in this fly-in community, whereas when we go to the grocery store, it's like three something. One lesson we had, we were tracking the journey and the distance and the cost of like a single store-bought fruit cup from Costa Rica that we found in our neighborhood grocery store versus what would it cost for us to purchase locally grown fruit and make our own fruit cup? What would the difference in the cost be? So like a humanized curriculum, it doesn't only coexist with academic rigor and growth, but it's necessary for like meaningful, authentic learning that allows students to consider just how deeply math connects to every aspect of our lives and the lives of those around us. So when we humanize curriculums, we're also looking for the living and the breathing moments where learning is already happening. I'm just thinking about how last week we were making French toast as a class. We have a kitchen in our school. So we're in the midst of this procedural writing unit. So I thought, okay, we can get concrete. Let's like make some French toast. A lot of the kids have never had it before. It's joyful. There's a mess of cinnamon everywhere that I had to clean up after. The music's going. But I'm like really trying to do this like living, breathing. I want to pause and I just want to watch and listen. So I'm watching, I'm listening to a group of students like chopping strawberries and discussing what half versus a quarter looks like. I'm observing two students plating French toast and they're skip counting by twos to ensure that each kid has two pieces. And then they're solving for how many slices we still need to make. I'm noticing an 8-year-old, he's pouring out milk for each of his peers into glasses. And I'm watching as he gets down to eye level every single time he pours. It's taking him a long time, but he's doing it. Mm. And he's pausing and to pour a little bit more to share or a small amount in the empty cup next to it. Then I had to ask him after, I'm like, well, what were you doing? I noticed you were doing that. And he said, I wanted no one to be sad because someone else has more. And another student chimed in, Miss, he wanted them to all be equal so that we all had the same. So we know that standard, non-standard measurement, fractional parts, skip counting are all part of our grade expectations. They're in our curriculums, they're in our standards. But it's these like small moments or examples of curriculum humanized that we really need to kind of spend more time doing. We need to have more of that. So we are humans teaching and learning alongside other humans. That's why humanizing curriculums are so important. And that has to be the foundation.
Hmm. Awesome.
I feel like we could talk about this forever because we have a lot of packaged curriculums now that are national. And so I'm not asking this question to you necessarily, but I'm just throwing it out there, you know, as we talk about humanizing curriculums, like how do we bring in that same humanization if it doesn't authentically exist in some of the packaged curriculums that we walk into because we don't necessarily have a say. A lot of time I'm a teacher, I go into a district, I don't necessarily have a say in regards to what I can teach. I have to teach what they tell me to teach and whatever approved resources that they have. And so how does one take what's there and add on those humanizing aspects without taking away from what they're expected to do? You know what I mean? So just thought for our listeners. Something to think about as we ponder.
That's a whole nother episode.
I know, because I don't know if that's something that we could really begin to like truly unpack like tonight. But what are some ways that teachers can center student voice, choice, and agency in their classrooms, given the present parameters that a lot of teachers have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a thing too. I'm going to ponder. I'm thinking about two things. What you just asked, Karen, also about what Abel said about what is the math. So like if we are considering the answer, the math, then those standardized booklets that we are told to do, like, is that the math? I think that's a question I want to throw out too. Like, what is the math? So I think we talk a lot about student voice, choice, and agency, but as educators, we really, really struggle with relinquishing control. It isn't just a teacher problem. I know there's many professions we struggle, but it's a growing pain for us as teachers. But we actually have to give students the space to actually use, practice, and grow their voices. So we can ask ourselves, how often is math a collective process where the room is filled with student voices just figuring stuff out? How often are students doing thinking presentations to explain their process and consolidating their learning? One of the easiest ways to start centering student voice is by listening to them speak to us and to each other, just listening to their conversations. We had a pair of students, they're fifth graders. They wanted to explain how they learned the viral, you know, that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that one, yep. That trend, yeah, because they use fractions. They were like, we figured out that 7 is actually twice as fast. So it's a 1/16th note of the whole. And I was like, this is math in action. You need to present this.
It's absolutely genius.
Tell us about this. Because I was like, I can't do it. I'm like, but you helped me. So we have to give them the freedom and agency to explore, to iterate, to build on their questions, and the choice and control to how they model and share and consolidate their learning. So I think about 2 years ago during a science unit I had with second graders on simple machines. Our class wanted to survey, we're learning about ramps. And they said, well, we don't really see a lot in our neighborhood. And we said, let's look at the storefronts in our neighborhood for accessibility. So we did a graph, we tallied, and they were able to figure out that over 50% of the stores in our neighborhood didn't have accessible ramps. So that was like a whole thing for them where they had to then write a letter to the city councilor. But what it really did is it's coming to a conclusion that math is not only relevant and meaningful, but it can be self-directed to help them answer their own burning questions. And Bob Moses taught us that we have to build a sense of agency in students so that they can use math as a tool for questioning and changing the world around them. So it should be a world-altering tool. I've learned over the last few years that so much of our struggle with centering student voice and choice is that we exist and are constantly in contention with this urgency culture. We're being told that we don't have time, but time is our most valuable gift and our resource. So we have to also really push to affirm to our students that not only are they worth the time, but when we're learning in a block or a period together, our time is in fact for them to learn. That's why we're there as educators. We're there for them. So the time is theirs. So I love sharing this line from Priya Parker's book, The Art of Gathering. And she says that category is not purpose. So math is a category. But as educators and leaders, we need to get more clear on what we believe its purpose to be so we can better support kids. So if we believe math to be a category, then like Abel said, like math is just the math, it's just the answer. But when we think about categories, not purpose, math should have a purpose. So what is its deeper purpose?
Absolutely. Math should have a purpose. And that's something that we're exploring here in California too, is what is the purpose of that and how do we put that into student curriculum? So I'm looking forward to that too. So thank you for that. And, you know, we've learned so much today. I just like Karen said, I love hearing and talking to you. And we haven't done that. So I am so happy to be here with you today. So I've learned so much. And as we start to wrap up this podcast, we always ask our guests to give one tip to those that are listening that they can do to support a sense of belonging in math. So I'm asking you, go ahead and give us a tip.
Okay. Tip for leaders. Tip
for leaders.
Yes. Education can be a truly life-giving force, but it cannot grow or be nurtured without the support and care for and from one another. I think it's so important for leaders to see each other and every single person that they have in their learning community as learners who need varying levels of support to help them be successful. So we all have learning to do. But grace, care, and uplifting each other and supporting each other, especially in this moment in education, is so, so vital. So I encourage educators and leaders to really see the light in the people that they teach and support and honor it. So just support each other.
Thank you for that.
Yes, that's one thing that we kind of hear as a byproduct, but not necessarily as a focus because... You know, if we're not caring for each other, I think it's when we truly deeply care and show that we care that we're actually moving past just like what's on the outside to what's on the inside into the core. Mm-hmm. It helps us to see people a little bit more for who they really are versus just what we can do day to day just to get the job done.
Correct.
So this has been absolutely amazing. Hannah, you know, I have so much love for you. Yes. And everything that you do. I learned so much from doing these podcasts. And the one thing that's resonating with me mostly from this talk is allowing students to be their authentic selves and just processing around how can we uplift students more in our classrooms so that they can feel like they truly belong. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. And before we leave, how can our listeners learn a little bit more about you and what you do?
Okay. Before I tell folks, I just want to thank you both again for this gift of space and time. We said time is like a precious resource. So thank you for making time for me and adjusting your schedules for me. I appreciate you giving me the chance to join you and for all the work that you do to support educators and for seeing the light in other people and seeing the light in me. So I appreciate that so much. To learn more about me, I'm slowly transitioning to the land of bluer skies, but connect with me on Twitter at Miss H. Elmi, MISSHELMI. I love learning with and from other folks in education. So don't hesitate to reach out before, I know, like many educators, moving over to the other platform.
So what is your name on Blue Sky?
Same name.
Oh, same name. Okay.
So you can find me on there as well. I'm still learning the ropes there. I find it's similar, but also different at the same time. So I'm trying to adjust, but it feels nice so far. The energy is nice over there.
That's a good thing to know.
It is. I'm trying to adjust to that too. It's different.
So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Abel.
Yeah.
Karen, yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been such a great conversation.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM Leadership and Mathematics Education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.